History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on 96.5, the Fan, Fesco and Dusty with you. Dusty, I almost said Fesco is off. I am, but I'm not. Dusty is off. And
what
Mac,
the hell was that?
Mac is here alongside.
Mac's
that's what happens
off.
When you get old. You forget your name. You forget where you are. But, I am a little bit off. But it is time to talk a little baseball, time to talk a little Kansas City, time to talk a lot of things great with Dayton Moore here on 96.5, the Fan. And, Dayton, we're a week away from the Topgolf tournament for CU and the Major Leagues Foundation, man. I'm getting excited for this one.
I can't wait. We are too. And, you know, it's been a lot of preparation. This is our fifth annual event. It's our top fundraiser that supports our mentoring program, which is entering its eighth year. And just so excited and really inspired by, you know, all the great work that so many people are doing. In fact, you know, as you know, I mean, your wife, Jen, she's involved with what we do. She's a mentor, and she's been a rock star for us and has come alongside so many of our students and given them hope and direction and just breathing life on them on a weekly basis, which, you know, all of our mentors do. And so we're just really, really thankful.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator Craig Thomas.
In seasons 1 and 2, we were joined by Neil Patrick Harris, Kobe Smulders, Bryan Cranston, Ashley Williams, Wayne Brady, Jenna Fisher and Angela Kinsey, Joe Manganiello, and my brilliant co-creator Carter Bays. And now we are diving into season 3.
So whether it's your 50th rewatch or your first time through, follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
The community that has supported this, and it just allows us to keep dreaming bigger and bigger.
Yeah, well, like, Dayton, can you give the Cliff Notes version of what you guys do in the community? Because I know what they do. You know what they do, what these mentors are doing for all these kids. Let's let the general public know, you know?
No, absolutely. You know, Marianne and I started the foundation back in early 2014. We had our first event at Bob Allen Ford, our good friend, Brad Hewlett opened up, his facility, and we launched the CU and the Major Leagues Foundation. And the foundation was created to support in the following four areas. We're going to support families in crisis, education, youth sports, and faith-based organizations and events. And so that's what we set out to do. We started entertaining at the stadium with small groups of young people throughout Kansas City, and we were challenged to start a mentoring program, which we did. It was right up our alley, and we have we started with 11 kids, and now it fluctuates between 19 and 20 each year, and we're looking to increase that. And the students meet on a weekly basis. They all have an individual mentor. We have several people that come in and speak to the students. They go on field trips. They do all kinds of different type of life skills. We have a character and leadership program that we have collaborated with Dr. Tim Elmore from Growing Leaders. And we created, like I said, a character and leadership program that they go through, and it's just been a wonderful thing.
It really has, and just watching the kids and seeing them from year to year to year get, just older and better and more confident and everything that you do. It really is, Dayton, an unbelievable program, and so that's why we want everybody to come out. Got a couple of bays available you can buy for the CU in the Major Leagues Topgolf event that is coming up on May 21st, a week from today. And when you look around baseball right now, Dayton, you got to kind of feel like a proud papa. You got some guys that you drafted with the Royals doing good things. Your former, I guess, prodigy Chris Getz is doing some good things, turning the White Sox around. You got to feel pretty good about where kind of, you know, your guys are right now in baseball.
Well, you know, Bob, like you, I mean, you've poured into a lot of people, and, you know, you're at a time in your life where you're mentoring and discipling and helping people, you know, kind of achieve some of the things that you've been able to experience. And you know, we're at the same stage. And, you know, I'm proud of, you know, our group. Of course, you know, I see probably parts of, you know, 3-4 baseball games a day. And I'm able to look at the game from a different lens at this stage, and not so emotional with it, which has really kind of helped me so much. And truthfully, I feel like I'm just now getting ready to lead. And, you know, it takes time in your leadership journey. And no matter how prepared you think you are, or how much success you've had, or who your mentors are, you have to go through the experience. You have to live it. You have to learn to make, you know, kind of battlefield decisions, you know, throughout your journey, and rely on great people to give you information, and trust those great people. But the big part of it is just the emotional stability of leadership, and not getting too high, getting too low. I know it's kind of a cliche, but it's really, really true. And, you know, because when emotion comes in, oftentimes logic disappears. And so, you know, I've been able the last, you know, 3 years or so to really kind of step out and just look at the game through a completely different lens, study different types of leaders, study the evolution of organizations and where we are in this game today at all levels. And it's fascinating. I'm learning a great deal. And, you know, I just really thankful for where I am right now.
Sounds like you're ready to lead again. Is it a baseball team? Is it a company? Like, you could lead anything, you know that.
Well, you know, it's kind of been interesting because, you know, like I said, over the last few years, you know, I've been exposed to a lot of different things in baseball, outside of baseball. And there are some unique opportunities. And, you know, I've just got to filter through some things, Bob, and see what, you know, those next steps are. But I've really enjoyed being present with Marianne and our 3 adult children, and again, be able to pour into our foundation more and allow us to grow and dream but we'll see.
Talking to Dayton Moore here. Yeah, Dayton, you brought up frustration within certain ball clubs and how you deal with that. Obviously, the Royals have been a team that we've seen have some frustration, and maybe it's come out, whether it be Salvador Perez and on Twitter, whether it be Vinny Pasquantino talking bad on himself with runners in scoring position, or last night, I don't know if you heard, Seth Lugo kind of questioning some of the ABS strategies. What does that tell you about a ball club when there's multiple instances of frustration kind of leaking out?
Well, baseball players are very independent thinkers, and they have strong ideas and beliefs about not only, you know, their future, but the team and what have you. So one of the biggest challenges is just keeping the unity, keeping guys together. And so if you can keep guys together, keep them on the same page and have them, you know, work through their frustration internally, privately, as a family, you've got a chance to, you know, to get through those types of situations and allow your bond to grow very, very strong. And so when it is time to win, there's nothing that's going to penetrate that bond, that mission. Nothing's going to drive a wedge between you and the team, your team and their goals. And I think that's always the challenge. I mean, and every team's going to go through, you know, kind of those tipping points, and there you're going to go one way or the other. And the teams that get rid of the drama the quickest are the ones that reach their ceiling. Of course, you got to stay healthy. We know that. And so every team is going to go through that. And, you know, I watch the Royals a lot. I love, you know, of course, I'm biased. It's never going to get out of my soul. That was my boyhood team. And you know, we had a very simple philosophy. We love baseball. We love the Royals. And we're going to share that love with everybody that we meet in this community, or wherever we travel, or wherever we go. And we use that platform to help people get better and help organizations get better and pour into families and use baseball as an opportunity to to be a positive factor in everybody's life. And so, and when you do that, I think when you lead that way, I think your players will catch on and they understand that. I love baseball. I love the Royals. I'm going to share that love with everybody that we meet. And, but baseball is, there's a lot of parity right now. You've got a few teams that are doing really, really well. And the others are, you know, they have their good weeks and their not so good weeks. And I've always said that the key is to have two good months and play around 500 the rest of the way, or one great month and play around 500 the rest of the way. That should get you into the playoffs. And I think a lot of teams are poised to do that. The Royals are certainly poised to do that. I mean, when you look at the Royals, they've got two of the most dynamic players in all of baseball, and Garcia and Junior, at the top of their order. And then they got, you know, guys like Isbell that are having a really, really good year at the bottom that can get on base and hurt you. And then they've got some power and in the middle of that lineup. And those guys will get going. One of my kind of idols growing up, and we worked together with the Braves, was Big Frank Howard. And that might not be a name that a lot of people don't know, but Frank Howard used to say, all the time, he'd say about June, those big guys get going, those power guys start finding their rhythm, and then they'll carry you, you know, the rest of the way. And, you know, and so, you know, we're struggling with some things with, you know, the Rangers.
Everybody is in the American
kind of up and down. Yeah. Anybody hit a big three run homer last night. I mean, he'd been struggling and he had a big three run homer for us last night and then got the game winning hit or tying. The drove in the tying run in the bottom of the ninth. And, you know, and so you just gotta stay with them and stay patient. And hopefully the players will come together and pull for each other unconditionally and allow them to get through some of the, you know, the struggles. And because every team's going to go through it, every player's going to go through it.
No doubt. Dayton, before we let you get out of here, a week from today, we've got the big Top Golf event. How can people write checks, donate, do whatever they want, be part of just you guys moving forward, you know?
Yeah, you know, just go to the CUinTheMajorLeagues.org, the letter C, CUinTheMajorLeagues.org. And again, looking forward to, you know, the event. You know, we've got Hall of Famers Jeff Montgomery and Dennis Leonard and Alex Gordon and Denny Matthews. And, of course, Duke Wathen will be there, who's being inducted into the Royals Hall of Fame this year. Well-deserved. Bob, you'll be there.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see you. You know, Fox 4, Abby Eden and Carly Ritter and Kerry Wickersham and our good friend Taylor Hempson from our Hempness from Channel 41. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, my good friend Jeremy Guthrie.
Yeah.
And Jim Eisenreich's always been one of my favorites. And, of course, we've got a great auction on tap with, you know, Salvi and Witt and George Brett and Bo Jackson jerseys and Mahomes and Kelsey and Andy Reid signed football. So there'll be a lot of good stuff there. And you know, just looking forward to seeing everybody. It's a great time for the community to come out. And like I said, this is our fifth annual event. And, you know, all the proceeds go to support our mentoring program and the scholarships for, you know, our students. And so anyway, it's a great time.
It will be. Dayton, I'm looking forward to seeing you next Thursday. Looking forward to seeing everybody next Thursday and continue to do the great work that you've been doing here in Kansas City.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Dayton.
You got it. Take care. Dayton Moore with us here on 96.5 The Fan. The Topgolf event coming up next week, raising money for all the kids here in Kansas City. A great organization. Coming up, Bill Belichick actually nailed it in a big way. Next.
Hey, it's Vinny Pasquantino, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan.
All right, our thanks to Dayton Moore, former Royals general manager, for joining us here on 96.5 The Fan, talking about Top Golf, his See You in the Major Leagues event that is coming up a week from today for the kiddos here in Kansas City for the mentoring program of his foundation, See You in the Major Leagues. Him and his wife, Marianne, do an unbelievable job of supporting the youth and the kids here in Kansas City, and so they're doing their Top Golf event. their biggest fundraiser. That is coming up a week from today out at Topgolf in Overland Park. All right, so Bill Belichick has been, I feel like, and I could be wrong about this again, Mac, I feel like he's been kind of quiet. We really have not heard much from Bill Belichick, I would say, probably since, I don't know, middle of last football season, right? They kind of quieted it all down. There was a little stuff at the end of the year, but they kind of put that thing in a bow at North Carolina, yeah. And Bill Belichick has not been that present.
Then Which they is good.
It needs to be.
He needs to be.
Yeah, he's right now, when you look at Bill Belichick, he's just a guy. He's nothing more than that. And he was doing an interview the other day on Sirius XM, I guess, with Jim Gray. And I listened to this clip of his, and I'm like, first of all, he sounded great. I was like, this is a different sounding Bill Belichick than what we're used to. He almost sounded relaxed. The guard was down. Maybe he's allowing himself to have a little bit more fun. I don't know what it is. But he sounded really like rejuvenated, I thought. And for Bill Belichick, he needs to have a good year at North Carolina, because each day that goes by that he's removed from that New England dynasty, it looks less and less about him and more about Tom Brady. And you know what? Bill Belichick will actually tell you that himself here in this clip.
Win games without good players. I don't care who the coach is. It's impossible. You can't win without good players. You know, I found out when I had Taylor and Banks and Harry Carson, Pepper Johnson, Jim Burt, Everson Walls, all those guys at the Giants. And same thing, you know, when we got good at Cleveland and then at New England. I mean, it's, you know, it's Brady, it's McGinnis, it's Vrabel, it's Brewski, it's Corey Dillon, it's Randy Moss, Troy Brown, Lawyer Malloy, Ty Law, Rodney Harrison. Those are the guys that won the games. Man, I didn't make any tackles. I didn't make any kicks. That was Vinatieri that made that kick in 4 inches of snow. You got to have good players. And as a coach, you want to give your players a chance to win. You want to put them in a position where if they go out there and play well, they'll have a chance to win. That's what Coach Parcells taught me is, there's always a way to win. You just got to figure out what it is, and you have to give the players a chance.
They don't name it the Star Trophy. It's named the Lombardi Trophy.
Maybe they should name it the Brady Trophy. He won seven of them.
So there you go. I don't think that's what they should do, is name it the Brady Trophy. I like Lombardi. I think that has a good ring to it. It's kind of become a brand, you know?
Yeah, it's great.
You don't want to. He was kind of chuckling there. But the stuff that he said beforehand, Mac, he nailed it. It sounds like me a little bit. You got to have the players that are going to go out there and win. And then the job as the coach is to put you in that position to be successful. Your job as a coach is to simplify things, find ways for your team to go out there and be successful, and then get out of the way and let the talent go out there and achieve that success. Your job as the coach is to give your players a chance to win. I don't think the coaches last year for the Chiefs gave the Chiefs a chance to win. I don't. And no, that's on Andy Reid.
Not on offense.
And that's what I'm saying, on offense. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, my bad. I should have been more specific. Offensively, I don't think Andy Reid gave this team an opportunity to win last year. I just thought it was a down year for the coaching staff. And we know the coaching staff didn't give the wide receivers a chance to win because they fired that guy and replaced him. We also know from obvious conversation, they fired the running back coach as well, brought in a new guy, brought in new running backs to that position. And so the two positions that didn't achieve success last year, we look at it and we go, well, maybe it was the coaching and not the players. That's what they're telling us. So they're telling us, based on what Bill Belichick said, they didn't have good enough coaches out there last year to put the players who are talented enough in position to win. Because that's what I was thinking when I was listening to Bill Belichick, and kind of a little bit of the conversation that I want to have. We can have it with the Royals, and we can have it with the Chiefs as well in this conversation. What if you have good enough players, but they don't win? Because I think we did see that last year with the Chiefs, right? They had good enough players, but they didn't win. Mahomes, Kelce, you know, everybody likes Rashee Rice again, Xavier Worthy. You had some players last year, but you didn't win.
Yeah.
Right?
I agree.
And
overall.
So, overall, big
overall,
picture. You could have used better players.
We were in a talent deficit a little bit, but overall, I agree with you.
Yeah. I mean, a little bit of a talent deficit, but what if, let's look at the Royals right now. What did Dayton Moore say? You got two of the best players in the game on the left side of your infield. You've got a Hall of Fame catcher. I know he's not putting up Hall of Fame numbers now. He's still a Hall of Fame catcher.
Yes.
That's behind home plate. And you're not winning games. You're five games under 500. So what if you do have good players, but you don't win games? That's when you start coaching.
That's
or talking about the coaches,
coaching,
and general managers and front office staff and all those, you know, guys that make a lot of money on that side of things. Because I think the Royals have good enough players. I think the Chiefs had good enough players. The Chiefs realized that they go, we didn't have good enough coaches last year. We did not do enough to put our players in position to be successful. And I think that really was a problem last year. Whether it's Jawan Taylor being exposed, whether it's never running the football and having your wide receivers exposed, not teaching them how to line up properly to disguise what play is coming, like all of that kind of stuff, the coaching staff last year, I don't think really gave the Chiefs a chance to win. And it looks like they've rectified that this offseason. Now you look at the Royals, they've got superstars on this team. You got a Gold Glover, top third baseman in the league over there in Mikel Garcia.
Yep.
You got Bobby Witt Jr. You've got Salvador Perez. You invested in your pitching staff in a big way in Lugo and Waka and Reagans as well. So you've got the players. Why aren't you winning?
Yeah, things are going to start pointing to off-the-field answers, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, front office, player decision-making, and, of course, the manager, Cutrero. And we've seen a lot of texts about Q as far as the lineup, and we mentioned the record versus lefties and righties. So it's an interesting conversation Belichick brings up that is related to the players and the coaches because, I don't know, he kind of contradicts himself. He says it's about important players, and then he mentions, well, yeah, but the coaches have to put them in the place to succeed. It's kind of 50-50.
It is, yeah. You have to have the players, but you also have the coaches.
You have to have the coach.
yeah, you do. Like,
and to me, and I know we're not doing this, which is more important, coach players, but this just one essence of the conversation kind of puts it in the coach's corner because if you don't have the players, but you still put your players in position to succeed, they'll succeed sometimes, maybe not all the time because they're not very talented.
Right.
But position to succeed means so much in this game. So much. Play calling, distractions, strategy. Hey, we're going to run in this situation. So next time we're in this situation, we're going to pass. Like all those sorts of forward thinking things can put a team that does have a talent deficit in a situation to win more often than not.
Yeah, and I think Bill Belichick obviously did that his first year when they won that first Super Bowl.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
They took a team that was at a talent deficit to the Los Angeles Rams, St. Louis at the time. I don't know if people know this. St. Louis used to have a football team, two of them.
Heard of him.
But you cheated, so people will go back to he stole the video, so he knew what they were going to do.
Okay.
But they were still less talented than the Rams. You still had to go out there, and I'm not absolving him for cheating at all. He's a cheater, but you still have to go out there and play the game. You still have to play defense. You still have to be able to cover Torrey Holt, Isaac Bruce, Marshall Faulk. You know, I don't think they took that Super Bowl as serious as they probably should have against the Patriots that day, and that's why the Patriots ended up winning. They ultimately ended up winning that game because of coaching. The coaches had them brainwashed that they could go out there and beat the Rams, where nobody was giving them a chance to go out there and beat the Rams. So that's an example of, they were probably coached up in that game to go out there and win that championship. Same thing goes for the Giants when they beat the Patriots that first time. That's a Spagnuolo win. I mean, that is a win for Steve Spagnuolo, coaching his defense up to get him to that level where they were able to shut down Tom Brady, who was 17-0 and scoring 40 points a game out there, and they held them to 10 points. That was coaching, putting your players that were good, not discrediting that at all, good players, but also giving them that opportunity to be in position to win. That's why I look at when they hire these young head coaches, you haven't had the experience that these older guys have had to know the nuances of how to win and certain ways to put your players in position. That's what these veteran coaches bring, those years of knowledge of understanding how it's done. And I'm not talking about just the NFL. I'm talking about all sports.
Yes,
you know,
all sports.
Like you look at some of these teams that are in these tank modes in the NBA or maybe even in the NFL, and we're all like, oh my God, this coach stinks. No, he doesn't. That coach doesn't stink. He's got no players, and they're trying to tank, and now this guy's got to wear it. And so that's why I keep coming back to the Royals, man. They're 5 games under 500 with probably more talent on this roster than they had in 14 and 15 combined.
Whoa. Geez, man. Really?
Yeah. Well, other than the bullpen, you got a better shortstop in Bobby Witt. You got a better third baseman in Mikel Garcia. You probably don't have a better first baseman. You got the same catcher.
Yeah,
you probably have better starting pitching
same
that
catcher
you can rely
who's
on.
Not as good.
Who's not as good.
Yeah, but yeah. still, same catcher.
No, I think there. I think look, man, to have a guy like Bobby Witt, that just elevates the entire roster. That should make everybody better. That left side of the infield that the Royals have right now. It, no offense to Moose or
I was
anything.
Say,
I mean, Moose is a good player, but I mean, Mikel Garcia is spectacular.
Better defensively for sure, right?
And I think offensively as
you
well.
You think offensively?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh
okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I go look at the numbers. I'm just you know maybe it's prisoner of the moment
listen,
type thing. But
I defer to you on this sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know more than me on this sort of thing.
I look at Mikel Garcia and I feel like that guy's getting a big hit every time he's at the plate. Every time he comes up there, I feel like that dude's getting a big hit. He is a spectacular defensive player. He's an unbelievable offensive player
what,
as well.
What about, okay, so the left side of the infield, what about the left side of the outfield with Gordon and Kane?
Yeah, Gordon and Kane, but I'll tell you what, man, Kyle Isbell's pretty damn good.
Okay, yes.
He's pretty
I like
damn
Kyle
good.
Isbell.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's better than Kane.
Lorenzo Kane?
No, I'm not saying he's better than Kane, but he's pretty damn good. Right field, I don't know. We don't have a right field. We didn't really have a right fielder then. Don't really have, you know, much of a right fielder now.
It's right field, yeah.
But no, I think if you're looking at starting pitching, I mean, Lugo and Waka and Cole Reagan's fighting for a Cy Young. We didn't have anybody fighting for a Cy Young award in 14 or 15. Had a dominating bullpen, which was outstanding. But it's an interesting conversation. The more I think about it, I'm like, eh. You can make a case for either side, probably, but I think at the end of the day, and this is not a fair way to look at it because the guy played for both teams, but this team right now has two Hall of Famers on it. The other one had one Hall of Famer on it. You know, 14 and 15 had Salvi. This one has Salvi and Witt. Imagine Bobby Witt in that lineup in 14
for
or 15.
Sure.
My
yeah,
God.
That changes, that changes the conversation.
They may not lose a game.
Yeah, again, I don't think you can say this one has two. Yes, it does have two Hall of Famers on paper, but again, Salvador Perez, as of right now, is not that player.
But,
it's in name only.
Right.
Right? That's what that is right now. So I would push back, even though I know you've got the baseball knowledge on me. I'd be shocked if that team had less talent than this team.
Now, I will say this. That was a team. I don't think this is much of a team right now. Like, those guys were, like, together as a team. You know, they did, like, that's the stuff that you've got to get to be that team. That's why they won in 14 and 15. It wasn't necessarily because they were the best players out there. They had the best team out there. And they found a way, as even Dayton was talking about it, knowing when the time is right to win and to push all your chips in. And they recognized that. Once all those guys came up from the minor leagues, they had this bond that is stronger than anything I've ever seen around here other than Mahomes and Kelsey. They all loved each other. It was all one for all for one. Like, that was a true team. That's why they were able to take it over the top. And then Ned didn't mess up the bullpen.
And that's what's coming in a lot is maybe they didn't have more talent, but they definitely had better coaching. And they had cohesion, as you mentioned, from the 405. This team has zero cohesion, and that starts at the top.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a cohesive team right now,
no.
Right?
They knew how to keep the line moving from the 816.
They did.
Yeah, Maybe some people agree with you, and then,
of course.
Others.
That's why it's a good topic.
Other people that say, no, not at all. If we had more talent, we'd be at the World Series. Not the way that works. Sadly, again, if you just got the most talented players, we'd see a lot of different teams win. If the most talented team won every year, sports would not be fun.
No.
Right? The Chiefs were never the most talented team. Never. They never had the best roster any year that they won the Super Bowl, and I will die on that hill. Never. They were actually most of the time, every time they've won the Super Bowl, they were playing the best roster that season. Both times the Eagles and the 49ers as well were the best 53-man roster. So, no, talent isn't always equal winning. You've got to have the coaching and as you mentioned, that chemistry, that cohesion. And that's something that, the Royals definitely don't have, and I don't know necessarily how they capture that. That's not something
you can't just create that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's not something like, all right, guys, let's get cohesive. Let's get chemistry.
Well, it's hard to be cohesive when you're not playing and without winning.
Without winning.
It's hard to be cohesive when you show up every day not knowing.
And I'll go back to that text that we had earlier if you tell Cags and Jensen they're going to be bad against lefties, they're probably going to be bad against lefties.
Yeah.
And that's what's happened. You don't play them against lefties, then you bring them in for one pinch hit, and they don't hit. You know, Cags doesn't hit last night, and you're like, well, what the hell? Yeah, he went 0-for-1.
Yeah.
You gave him one chance.
The last at-bat of the game.
And guess what? Jensen 2-for-2.
Yeah.
And his pinch hit opportunity against a lefty. I don't know.
So, anyway, so that Belichick stuff was just very interesting when it comes to coaching. But at the end of the day, you have to have good coaching and good players, and they have to work together. The good coaches have to be able to put the good players in position to go out there and be successful.
And to bring it back to the Chiefs, because we're going Royals, Chiefs kind of fluctuating here, to bring it back to the Chiefs, I think that you mentioned the offense and the questions we have there. Okay, wasn't a talent deficit. Coaching, Andy Reid, all the guys you hired, you're on notice. You're on watch. Magnifying glasses put on. And I'll say that vice versa for the defense. Hey, Spags, you told us, and we obviously thought we didn't have enough talent. So we went and did it. Two first-round picks. Hey, here's a third-round pick. Hey, here's another guy. First four picks, defense. All it is. You know, like, we gave you what you wanted. You wanted Mansoor Delaney. You didn't want us to bring him in for a visit. Just wanted to Zoom it. We listened to you.
Right.
So to juxtapose that, the pressure's still on Spags as well. Hey, man, we've got you the talent now. Is this going to be a good unit?
Yeah, and I was thinking a little bit about Spags and the defense yesterday, because that's what I do on an Idle Wednesday. I dream about Steve Spagnuolo and defense. And for some reason, I thought, God, this defense last year, I mean, it was like so pathetic at times. And then you look at the numbers and you're like, well, no, maybe not. I mean, the Chiefs right now in the last 5 years have given up the fifth fewest touchdowns on defense. That was a mind-boggling stat to me.
Yeah.
And you look about last year and you go, well, how were they so bad on defense last year? Well, it's pretty simple. They couldn't get off the field on third downs. You know, that ultimately ended up, they didn't let a lot of touchdowns go through, but they couldn't get off the field. They gave up field goals. And when you have an offense that was predictable and everybody knew what they were going to do, giving up field goals and not being able to get off the field on third down is a big time detriment. And so now we've got these younger players, these faster players. I am excited to see what's going to happen on defense with all these young players. But I do want to give a cautionary tale for a minute. And I'm really cautioning for you, for me, and all the fans on this one to not overreact in the first couple of games of the season when we see this defense. Because as we know, when Steve Spagnuolo takes over a team, takes a little bit of time for these defenses to gel. And I had the same conversation when Steve Spagnuolo was hired as the defensive coordinator after that 2018 season. And everybody was excited about Steve Spagnuolo. I said, here, be cautious for a second, because the first couple of games aren't going to be great when Steve Spagnuolo takes over. Go back and look what he did with the Giants his first year there. They won the Super Bowl. They gave up 72 points, I think, in their first two games combined. 72 points in their first two games. And everybody's like, this guy sucks.
This
he's no
terrible.
Good.
Yep.
And then it took over and everybody went, oh, I see what we're doing here. And they held Tom Brady to 10 points at the end of the game, at the end of the year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they went from the worst defense at the beginning of the year to a defense that was taking care of Tom Brady at the end of the year. And I was kind of thinking about that a little bit yesterday. I'm like, yeah, we got all these new guys that are coming in. And even when Spags took over here that first year, the first couple of games were rough from a defensive standpoint. Then they figured it out and they found out ways to play and they did their thing and they moved forward. So what I'm getting at is the first couple of weeks of this season from a defensive standpoint, everybody's going to be watching, paying attention, sitting on the edge of their seat. It may be rough for the first 2 weeks, but after that, they're going to pick it up. That's just the way the Spags defense goes.
For sure.
And you've also got young guys, too. How many rookies are going to be trying to learn this defense for the first time?
And young corners specifically. Noah Williams didn't play as much as he should have last year. And then Mansoor Delaney, obviously a rookie corner. And their week one is going to be up against a Broncos team that I don't think has great wide receivers, but they have two of the best number two wide receivers in the league.
Yeah.
Jalen Waddle and Cortland Sutton, I think, are two number two wide receivers. Those are the best second options, and they're playing together. So they're going to go up against some veteran presence, some speed right off the top, and a guy in Bo Nix who is all right at slinging the rock. I think he's gotten a little overrated as far as his throwing prowess is concerned. But either way, yeah, they're starting off with a pretty solid challenge. I think the Spags timeline of defense, it's similar to that of the game, that is the season. The way he starts a season is like a game, because we talk about this with just individual games with Spags. Like, don't judge the first quarter.
Right.
Like, it's going to start slow. They're going to score that opening touchdown, but then wait for that second half. Wait
right.
for the adjustments. He's going to learn. Same thing within a season.
Yeah.
Just give him some time, especially with young players. I'm not worried about this defense, but I will say, yeah, you've got probably what is going to be a tough first four games. This schedule could be tough. We already know the Broncos week one, that's going to be an offense that is above average, right? They have a good running game. They've got a deep passing game as far as options to go to now with the addition of Jalen Waddle. So what do those next three games entail? How slow does it start, and can you manage it?
And can the offense be good enough to kind of cover for the defense in the first couple of weeks
of
the season?
No excuses on the offense.
No, there shouldn't be now.
I don't care. Ken Walker's new. I don't give a rip.
Right.
Hand him the football. Run through the gap. Let's go.
That's exactly right. I'm with you on that. There should be no excuses this year. You have the opportunity to be a balanced offense, a very balanced offense, really for the first time since they had Jamaal Charles, or maybe that first year with Kareem Hunt at running back. You have a legit option now in the backfield where you truly can be a multi-dimensional team, and I'm excited to see that.
And the offensive line's the same. I know Jalen Moore addition's new, but he played here last year. These all the five guys are healthy. The wide receivers are the same. You've got your Hall of Fame tight end. Like, it's not like Spags where it's rookies and young guys and new pieces been here for 2 years. And no,
right.
Like new positions, none of that. Like, these are the same guys,
right?
Same head coach, some new positional coaches that you chose. Let's get it going.
Yeah, I'm with you. Week one, let's start the aerial show. Let's start the ground game show, whatever it is. Let's keep that offense generating points so the defense can eventually get up to where it needs to be.
And they will.
They 1,000% will. But I was just thinking about that yesterday.
No,
man, a lot of young guys on this defense. I remember every time Spags takes over a defense, it's a little slow at the first go. And I remember cautioning Josh when this was going to happen. I go, just give it the first 2 weeks. Let it go.
I don't know.
And I'm like, give it the first couple of weeks. It's going to be okay. I've seen this before. And then it turns.
Yep.
And then it turns. And it clicks. It's like anything.
Yeah.
You're never going to be good at something the first time you do it, right? Whatever it is in life. You weren't good at riding a bike the first time or driving a car or asking a girl out or whatever it is, right? You're never good at something the first time you do it. But once you get those reps and you prepare and you practice and you gain that confidence, then you have that opportunity to be good. And nowadays in the NFL, you don't really have preseason games, right? You don't have that ability to work out all of that stuff before the regular season starts, especially at a speed that the regular season is going to possess. And so when you're rookies and you've never played in the NFL before, oh my God, week one probably is a little bit of an eye-opening with truly how fast that game moves. And you know, because you've been down on the field, how fast that game moves.
Faster than I do in the parking lot running routes.
No
doubt. Say that.
But imagine being a rookie and not, like, there's always somebody on the college team, that guy's a little bit, so he's not going to play at the next level. A rookie, you got 11 guys that are better than you.
Yeah.
And that's an eye-opener, man. That's a culture shock. Guys are like, whoa. And all the practicing, all the preseason doesn't get you ready for what's going to take place on that September day.
No.
At Arrowhead Stadium with the lights on. It's a night game. And now you're going up against the division champion Denver Broncos who want to kick your ass.
Oh, man. Yeah, get ready. Yeah, welcome to the NFL type moment week one. Like, whoa.
It's right there.
Goosebumps. At least it's at home for that young defense.
Sure.
You'll have that crowd behind you.
You'll
get a good tackle. Boom. You're going
to
hear it.
Yeah. And you get to that quarterback early, which they need to do.
We will be loud.
Man, the place will go insane. Woo. It will absolutely go nuts. Coming up
here. I know
that
I'm hard.
On 96.5 The Fan. And this is why we hate LeBron. Next.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty, brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. Your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Fan fell into the bullpen last night for the Royals.
Whoa.
Yeah. They had that stoppage of play for about 5 minutes, and nobody really knew what was going on. And I was watching the White Sox broadcast last night, and the announcer's like, something has happened. We'll get back to you more later. Because you knew something was going on. And about 20 minutes later, I don't know how long it was later, the announcer for the White Sox gets on and goes, well, the reason we had a stoppage of play is somebody fell into the Royals' bullpen.
Yo, that's scary.
That booze, it's the White Sox. I mean, that's also the same crowd that challenged our first base coach and tried to beat him up with Tom Gamboa. I mean, so we're talking about a crazed group of fans, but to fall out of the crowd into the bullpen, I don't know if the guy, I'm sure the person was, I'm assuming it was a guy, was okay.
Was
otherwise,
fine.
We probably would have heard more about that. But
but
that's where that stoppage was. I mean, it happens, man. People get so drunk at these games and things. Like, again, the guy falling out of the upper deck at Arrowhead years ago was like one of those unbelievable things ever. I mean, it was like
scary.
Yeah, live to tell about it.
Very scary. Yes.
So, I mean, the guy falling into the book. Could you imagine if you're out in that bullpen and all of a sudden body falls in here? The hell is going on out here? Somebody threw a body into the bullpen.
You're spitting the dip, playing stupid games, being a knucklehead. You're like, what the hell?
Maybe someone you were sleeping.
Yeah, literally. And all of a sudden someone just falls in. No, that's crazy.
Yeah, somebody fell into the bullpen last night, according to the White Sox television broadcast. And so I never did see video of it. I haven't really seen much on X about it, but I'd like to know more about, you know, what exactly happened and how it how this guy or gal or whoever it was, you know, fell into the bullpen. Not like Fountain Mom, who decided to just go swimming in there and thought that was a good look.
Yeah.
But this one tells me that somebody maybe had too many cocktails out there and they decided that they could get into the bullpen and do the job of, you know, some reliever or whatever the case may be.
So. 913 says White Sox fans are the Oakland Raider fans.
They really are. That's a good comparison. It really is. It's a great comparison of that fan base versus the Oakland Raider fan base. So LeBron James, I mean, this is peak LeBron, and I love your question that you have in the doc, Mac, about this.
Yep.
Bleacher Report reports on March 31st, the Lakers defeated the Cavs to secure LeBron his record-breaking 1,229th win. In the same game, Luka passed 15,000 points, and Redick coached his 100th win as a head coach. The GM gave the game ball to Redick over anybody else, and LeBron feels now it's another example of the Lakers taking him for granted. I mean, is that not just peak LeBron?
I mean, so this is via Dave McMiniman. So very legit NBA reporter.
Right.
So you think LeBron had this purposefully leaked. Is that correct? You think after the season, this was like a LeBron, hey, let's let everyone know why I'm unhappy.
I'm guessing probably something like that. The Darren Peterson stuff was planted to show everybody he's okay and what happened, and you need to plant that kind of stuff. It's also LeBron's camp probably planting some of this stuff so when he does leave, you don't have Laker fans maybe mad at him. I don't know. Like, do Laker fans care, though? I mean, and I'm being serious about that. Like, you don't look at LA fans like you do a Boston fan or a New York fan or a Chicago fan or somebody like that that's going to get really pissed. You look at an LA fan, it's like, oh, LeBron was here? They may be more stunned to think, oh, LeBron played
LeBron
here,
was here? Wow.
than LeBron leaving. So that's where I'm like, you don't really need to do that for LA. If you were leaving Cleveland, I understand maybe you want to get that out there. The organization's bad. This is why I'm leaving. But in LA, who really cares that you know that you're leaking this stuff out or that you will leave? Because LA isn't just a dye-in-the-wool sports fan base like just about everybody else is in this country. And, you know, it's just another kind of line of why LeBron James will always be that second fiddle to Michael Jordan. You know, it's just like, come on, LeBron, why? Who cares who got a game ball? It's such petty stuff. You think the Lakers took you for granted? For what? You guys didn't really win anything. How did they take you for granted? They drafted your damn son.
I will say it is funny how we do this with LeBron. Oh, he's so petty. But we praise Jordan's pettiness. We love that he's petty because he is.
Yeah.
He is. He is petty.
But
he,
it felt different, though.
I know, because we didn't have media.
Maybe.
We didn't have Twitter. We didn't have David Miniman saying this story. It was just LeBron in his house going, and I take that personally.
Yeah.
Or I heard that what that fan said, or, you know, whatever, Reinsdorf, whatever idiotic comment he would make about the team or about MJ, and he would take that personally.
Yeah.
And, like, you need that sort of fuel.
You need that edge. Mahomes does that.
Of course. All the greats do that. Tom Brady, I'm sure, did it in multiple
ways. All the time.
Ways.
Bill Self does it with his team all the time, too.
I mean, at some point, Tom Brady's pettiness became not outwardly but inwardly towards the coach and was like, you know what? Actually, I'm going to prove you wrong, Bill Belichick. Tampa Bay, let's go win a Super Bowl.
Right.
Kind of thing. But with this, I mean, is he wrong? 1,229th win? And you're giving it to Redick because he won 100, had his 100th win as a head coach? Get bent. I mean, LeBron James just had a record-breaking win. So also, I do think it's a reason to be upset. I just think it's funny how with LeBron, if he's upset or if he's petty or if he's mad, we're, oh, LeBron bitching and moaning yet again. Here he is. What a whiner. La flop. La cry. But MJ does it. Oh, badass, dude.
But
he bookmarked that.
Yeah, but it's just different with Michael Jordan. Like, you mentioned the pettiness that he has that was kind of inward, using it for himself to fuel his fire. You didn't see Jordan out there complaining about people getting a game ball or that kind of stuff. And it just continues to add to the narcissistic personality that is LeBron James. Like, be happy for your coach, because now that you're going to be gone, and who knows if Luka's going to ever play, you know, to the level that he needs to play, how good is Redick going to be out there? And so I don't have a problem with a GM honoring a coach who everybody gave him all that static about hiring. I still don't think it was a great hire, obviously. But if you're the GM, you're like, yeah, this guy got 100 wins in 2 years already. You know, has it been 2 or 3 years now?
For what?
Redick.
Redick, this will be his second season, I think. Yeah, I think so.
So he's had 2 full seasons there.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not 3.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I'll look it
up, but he's got 100 wins. I mean, that's a milestone. You're the GM. You hired this guy. You want to, you know, how many game balls does LeBron have? You know, that's the other thing. Like, LeBron's probably got 1,000 of these game balls. Redick did something early in his career and they wanted to honor it. I just don't understand why that's a big thing for LeBron James.
No, I get that. I understand. I just think the LeBron hate. I'm a Jordan GOAT guy, to make every listener aware of that. Okay. I do think Jordan is the GOAT, but I am on here defending LeBron a lot because I just feel as if the disrespect gets way too far. And I think if Jordan was around, when social media was around, we'd have all this stuff with Jordan just as we do with LeBron. I mean, we've got this text. Jordan earned the pettiness. LaFlop has done nothing but complain. And then this next 816 is a different number. The difference is Jordan would go out and win. LeBron went to 8 straight finals. He's the winningest NBA player of all time. Stop. Yes, he doesn't have the titles. Jordan won more titles. The finals, I understand those things that matter. But he won more regular season and playoff games combined than anyone else. Anyone. Michael Jordan's not second on that list either, by the way. I'll add. So we don't have to. Both things can be true at once.
Sure.
LeBron does complain.
Yeah.
He is annoying. The flopping's a lot. Like, the bitching to the refs, way too much. I'm with him on that. I'm with the text line on that. But also, he knows how to win. Both can be true. He's pretty damn good at this.
Oh, he knows how to. Yeah.
8 straight finals doesn't happen because you're luck
and
plain.
And that's like we're comparing, you know, Mahomes to Brady and LeBron to Jordan. Those records may never be beat.
Yes.
And it's okay. You don't have to have those titles to be considered A, the greatest of all time, or B, the second greatest of all time. The eye test gives you a lot of that. And for me, because I don't go back to Wilt Chamberlain, I don't go back to Dr. J,
yeah.
I don't go back to Pete Maravich. Like,
totally.
The guys that I saw play, Jordan and LeBron are the two best. It's not a conversation. I don't even know who number 3 would be. I mean, Steph Curry, maybe. I don't know. But it's those two.
Yep.
And they're the best that Kareem. Have ever played this game. Yeah, Kareem, Magic, you know,
yeah,
Bird.
Magic, yep.
You know, there's some great players that were out there. How glad are those players, to be honest with you, that social media didn't exist?
Yes, 100%.
I mean, what would our perception be of our sports heroes from when we grew up to where we are now if social media existed? Because I think social media has hurt LeBron James more than LeBron James has hurt himself.
Because, I mean, LeBron, like 25 years as a superstar, I mean, not one scandal. I mean, we heard from Marlon's man, a scandal about his mom bigger than anything we've ever heard about LeBron James, right? 25
exactly.
years, no marriage issues, kids,
nothing.
Good family.
Great guy.
Yeah, opened that school for...
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house, something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Kids in Need in Ohio, which I love, like all that sort of stuff he does. But yeah, because of the social media, because of the quotes, because of him having... you know, reading books that he doesn't actually read and saying things that he doesn't like. He has some cringe quotes like, yeah, I knew Kobe was going to 81 that night. Like, LeBron,
no, you
shut
didn't.
Up. You sound like such an idiot.
Yeah.
But so I get that. But also it's just I think being, like you said, Larry Bird or being Kobe Bryant at this point or any of those guys, I want to be right below the first or second best, because then you just kind of sit there and you get glorified. LeBron, I mean, he gets nothing but trash and he's the second greatest.
Right.
I kind of wish I was the fourth or fifth, because then you just kind of get done. Oh, yeah. And Larry Bird. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Kareem. He's awesome.
Right. But if LeBron just did basketball, right, and didn't get involved in everything else that is out there, and he's always in your face, whether it's a movie, a TV show, a podcast.
He's there.
He's everywhere. He's everywhere. And I think that does. I think it wears on people.
That's true. It's like the Kelsey's. That's starting to happen with them.
Yep.
You're right.
It gets to a point where people are like, all right, enough.
Yeah.
Seen you too much.
Yes.
Move on.
Yes.
Find somebody else. And that's exactly what we will do. Coming up here on 96.5 The Fan, a pitcher's pissed, a caller is done, and a former GM provides hope. All next.
Hey, it's Matt Quatrero, and you're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by Golden Oak Lending. Do you need extra cash? Golden Oak Lending can convert your home's equity into cash in as little as 14 days. Let Golden Oak Lending cure your blues. 96.5 The Fan.
Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.